Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
I do too.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you?
In the palm of your hand,
use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan.
Change it.
Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And today's date is April the 24th, 2019. And we have another very, very exciting edition for you today on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And of course, I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And you know, those who join us on a regular basis, you know that call-in number is 646-668-2948. That's 646-668-2948. And if you join us on a regular basis, you know this show is also brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative. And you know the slogan for this show is, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies to address the high effects of energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment of young Black African-American men and women here in the DMV market area and nationally. Also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. It's also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF, HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. Also is brought to you by, every week, by Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional, newspaper production, online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, and speaker bureau management. And for contact information, that's ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. That's ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. Now, we're hoping that we will be joined by Mr. Tracy Woods, Vice President of Operations for the American Association of Blacks in Energy. And he'll be coming on with us very, very shortly to discuss their upcoming national conference. This conference offers a powerful connection of energetic exchange and top-notch sessions geared toward energy professionals, policymakers, entrepreneurs, and students and federal officials. They want you to join them at their 42nd annual conference of the American Association of Vaccine Energy, AVE, at the new and improved certified Green Hotel, the Marriott Hotel in Indianapolis, Indiana, downtown Indianapolis, from April 30th through May 3rd, 2019. Now, you can log on to our website, click on our News and Events tab, and you will be able to get more information on this upcoming conference, which will be next week. But we hope that we will be joined by Mr. Tracy Woods. We had him scheduled, and we put in several calls and sent an email. We didn't get a response, but we do know that Brother Woods is pretty reliable about coming on and joining us here on this platform. So we won't hold that against him. But we're going to continue with our show today. We're going to move on because we've got a large what we would say amount of information that we want to disseminate to our listening audience who join us here on Blog Talk Radio every week. And we're streaming live from our nation's capital, right outside of our nation's capital, from Tacoma Park, Maryland. We are streaming over Facebook and Twitter, over the World Wide Web. So you know that if you join us on a regular basis. Once again, we want to welcome you to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. But what we would like to do, being while we're waiting for Brother Woods to come on and join us this morning, we're going to move on to our next segment, which will be our news and events. In that area, we want to talk about a recent article that was written by Mrs. Denise Fairchild, President and CEO of Emerald Cities Collaborative, how inclusive contracting can produce the infrastructure we need. Now, I had the privilege over the weekend of watching a special on PBS radio, which talked about the end of Reconstruction. And if we begin as Africans living in North America, and I refer to us as that, not as African Americans, but Africans living in America, because our ancestors, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us, because we, most of us, know that those of us who are aware of our history is that we came before Columbus. That's been documented by the late great Ivan Van Sertima, who published that very, very educational and informative piece of research talking about the African and the Americans long before the European even arrived here on these shores. So all of our ancestors were not slaves, as we have been led to believe by the so-called history. If you study his story and history, well, the history is different than his story. And I'm talking about that history that's been documented by those of European descent, because a lot of folks want to project that that is our beginning in this country. And that is not the case. But in looking at our struggle in this country, it all goes back to looking at how the government formulates public policy. And public policy determines how a group of people can be marginalized and exploited by the policy that are established by our Congress, senators, state legislatures, local mayors, city mayors, county mayors, county executives, and your local city council elected officials. These are very, 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 very important times here in this country. And if we begin to look very, very closely at the African experience here in this country, it's very, very, very clear to me that nothing has really changed when it becomes about the economics of how our ancestors and our labor today is still being marginalized and utilized for cheap labor. And we're going to delve into that. We're going to look at this from a local and national perspective. And that is why I am talking about this specific article, which you'll be able to locate by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com, and you can scroll down to the article written by Mrs. Denise Fairchild, who is the CEO of Fairchild Enterprises. And I think she did a very, very excellent job in laying this out. Now, how inclusive contracting can produce the infrastructure we need? You'll find that article, which is a little dated. She wrote this article over a year ago, September the 20th, 2018. But when we began to look at what's going on in the District of Columbia and nationally around the green initiatives that are being passed locally and nationally, as well as the green legislation that is being proposed in Congress, where 45's administration is pushing back, trying to kill it. There's a lot of governments, a lot of things that governments can do to connect disadvantaged communities to economic opportunities. For decades, many states and local officials have proved that they had to choose between developing the economies and protecting the environment, but the reality is they have an opportunity to do both. Creating jobs in a struggling communities while building green, reliant 21st to make that happen, though we need the right contracting and procurement policies in place. This litany of changes is familiar. Our infrastructure is deteriorating. It's deteriorating. Just as climate change places new stresses on our aging roads, Lord knows if you've been to the district, if you're riding in the District of Columbia, we don't have, some of our entire roads are potholes in some of our wards, especially east of the river. I experienced that yesterday in traveling to Waldorf, Maryland for a dental appointment. And I had to use Southern Avenue. And I'm glad to see that they are putting finally some new pavement down, but believe me, it can do a job on the front end and your tires and the whole nine yards. And these are economic impacts. This is why we call this show Solar Now in the Future, with its economic impact on Black America, because we're talking about infrastructure here. Now, as I indicated, there's a litany of changes. Is familiar. Our infrastructure, as I indicated, is deteriorating just as climate change places new stress on, as we were talking about, aging roads, dams, sewer, and power plants. And the much vaunted economic recovery has left too many people behind, especially in communities of color. State and local governments play an increasingly important role in infrastructure construction. Each year, they spend at least $250 billion. Once again, let me repeat that. This article indicated that each year in the U.S., they spend at least $250 billion in infrastructure, including transportation, energy and water sewer systems upgrades. But a recent report by the Emerald Cities Collaborative and Public Link shows that the infrastructure spending will not automatically lift all boats, especially in historically marginalized communities. Well, whose communities are you talking about? You're talking about communities where Africans living in America, African descent, and those who have recently come to the U.S., and those of color live in the U.S. Now, related, this is why this year to begin addressing infrastructure deficits, removing the impediments to infrastructure investments, the job creation infrastructure every community needs can be inclusive, innovative local economies, fighting neighborhood displacement, one sewer plant at a time. The report highlights the multi-layer challenges that minority-owned, disadvantaged, and veteran-owned businesses and enterprises face in competing for infrastructure contracts. To overcome those challenges, governments must purposely be about connecting local underrepresented businesses to economic opportunities that were inclusive in procurement and contracts, where contracts come in. Of course, there is no one-size-fits-all inclusion policies. Inclusion procurement and contracting policies has evolved over 60-year history into a complex maze of standard requirements that differ by procurement agency, the level of government, and the local and state political environment, but few strategies apply broadly. As we look at priorities, local governments, especially for underrepresented businesses, small and medium size local businesses, those with fewer than 500 employees, are major engines of our job growth. In fact, nearly half of the nation's private sector is employed at small businesses, and small businesses are responsible for 2 out of 3 new jobs. They are the secret sauce for spurring the local economy. But these enterprises are often cut out of the infrastructure contracts, which favor large prime contractors that dubiously true to the MWDBE, which bear the legacy of discrimination in lending contracts and business ownership to the level the playing field states and local municipality should ensure that infrastructure investments give priority consideration to local contractors, including those historically excluded from the public sector opportunities. Now, she's laid out a group of things that we're going to hit upon as we look at why our companies and we are not able to really move forward in job creation and growing our businesses in this economy. One of the primary focuses of the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperatives is to bring together all of our African-American solar installation, development, and installation companies under a cooperative umbrella so that we would be able to work and share information about various contracting opportunities and support each other and to push forward in making sure that where our population base resides in the U.S., we are able to go after our fair share of contracts. Because if you're not talking about growing and creating businesses, and when you create businesses, you have to have the capitalization and you have to have the opportunities to grow these businesses. If you're not talking about that, then you're really not talking about anything, because we live in a capitalistic system, and energy is the number one reason why the continent of Africa has all of the resources, cannot manufacture, produce, and grow these resources to benefit the African nations and the populations bases there, because we have outside competing corporate interests, worldwide corporate interests. Let's understand this. Economics is a team sport. As Dr. Claude Anderson has elegantly laid out in his book, Black Labor, White Wealth, he's also documented that in several of his other publications that he's come out where he talks about vertical integration in industry. One of the most powerful industries on the planet, when we began to look at it very, very carefully and look at where all of your real wealth is created in the energy sector. And if you begin to look at your billionaires in this country, you will find out that they are very, very much invested in the energy industry. Oil, gas, natural gas, wind turbine, hydrogenetics, which is nothing but water, dam power, biomass, which is the burning of any type of material to generate electricity, as well as wind and solar, which are considered renewable ways to get green electrons on the grid. In this industry, people are competing every day for contracts. And it comes right down to the local politicians who pass the legislation, such as legislation that has recently been passed here in our nation's capital and in the state of Maryland, where they passed renewable energy portfolio standard legislation, and the district just recently passed the Omnibus Act of 2018, which has moved the renewable portfolio standards to 100% of the energy which will be used in the marketplace in the District of Columbia must come from renewable sources by year 2032. It's a 50%, 100%. The state of Maryland has just recently passed a new renewable energy bill requiring 50% by year 2030 and by year 100% by year 2040. So as we began to look at how these things move forward and we began to look at the new technologies such as electric vehicles, as we look at cybersecurity, the role it plays in the energy industry, all of these technologies tie in with the artificial intelligence as well as the 5G technology. All of these are new technologies which are going to have a paradigm shift on the workforce in this country. But even with those changes, there's going to be a huge demand now for training of more electricians for wiring of these electric vehicle charging infrastructure locally and nationally. These are growth industries that we need to be talking about putting that information in the forefront to our communities. Now, we want to look at this article. Dr. Denise Fairchild, she laid this article out. She did an excellent job in it. She said, looking at the adopting accessible projects delivery methods, water, energy, transportation, and other climate resilient infrastructure projects are large-scale, multi-billion-dollar long-term endeavors. The process for bidding on these complex projects has become increasingly difficult for small contractors. More than three dozen state legislatures have given local governments the authority to use public-private partnerships and other innovative project delivery methods to develop, cut the time, cost, and complexity of these projects, but the three P's can undercut local development goals because they are designed to maximize efficiency and investment returns. The three P's tend to bid out large contracts to national or international firms rather than unbundling the bids to match the capacity of smaller and local contractors. One alternative is for more public authority to move beyond low bid methods to value-based contracting in which local procurement is one of the articulated project's goals. Governments need to ensure that these goals are embedded in the program design and throughout the construction process. Build a robust small business ecosystem. Finally, success requires improving support systems to help local businesses effectively compete. This includes streamlining a multitude of local state agency certifications programs and sharing regional data on MWDVBEs available to collaborate on large projects. It is also critical to increase small business access to bonding, insurance, and capital. Prime contractors can be awarded extra points for helping their smaller subcontractors obtain these essentials. In addition, a small assessment of infrastructure projects can really capitalize collateral pools to provide credit enhancement for smaller contractors. Of course, strategies run the risk of modesty, increasing program costs. But the point is that we get what you pay for. It's true. Then if you want good jobs for local residents, you will have to pay for it. With major infrastructure investments on the horizon, state and local governments are uniquely positioned to put the jobs versus environment myth to rest. Now, I think that this is a very, very relevant article when we began to look at the issue of what is going on right now in the District of Columbia. The District of Columbia, Mayor Bowser, in the appropriations and signing of the Omnibus 2018 Omnibus Act, that was Bill B-240, which I testified in October 9th in front of Councilwoman Mary Shea, who heads the commission, not the commission, but who has oversight over at the City Council on environment and transportation. The commission, which is headed by Tommy Wells, former City Council member, now heads the Department of Energy and Environment here in the nation's capital, here in Washington, D.C., has, in fact, they commissioned a study which was done, which shows that over the next 10 years, the District of Columbia has $1.8 billion worth of infrastructure work to be done in the nation's capital alone. Now, when you begin to break this down and look at how these contracts and who's going to make these decisions within that legislation, there was the set fees, Sustainable Energy Trust Fund, which will fund the Green Bank of Washington, D.C. Now, if you've been listening to me on this platform, you know we beat the drum around this whole issue of these compliance fees when you look on your gas, electric, and water bills in the District of Columbia. You will see these compliance fees that have been applied to your bill to pay for this renewable energy infrastructure. And it's no joke, folks. This can drive a lot of marginal folk, with especially those baby boomers who are on fixed income living in their homes. Because if you can't come up with the money to pay your water bill, your property can be seized in the District of Columbia. So we're talking about some realistic issues that must be examined. Now, we're going to go ahead and continue to move forward because the time slot for Brother Tracy Woods has come and gone. So I do not believe that I'm going to be joined today by Brother Woods to talk about the American Association of Blacks in Energy in detail about their upcoming convention. But I provided him with that opportunity. We talked, we scheduled that, and it seems as though he's had a change in his schedule. But we're always appreciative if they can just send us an email and let us know. You know what I'm saying? So as we continue to beat our drum around what is important, we're going to look into some other issues around this issue of infrastructure and programs that have been recently approved by the Public Service Commission here in Washington, D.C. And as I've indicated to our listening audience time and time again, please log on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Once again, that's positivechangepc.com. Please look at scrolling down, and you'll be able to find these articles, and you'll be able to follow our broadcast and subject matter, and you can read the articles for yourself, because we do a lot of research and putting this information together every week to bring you this show. And we are hopeful that you listen in and that you are appreciative of this information, because nobody else is talking about these issues on a consistent basis, week to week, week to week. We get so caught up on all of the peripheral issues of white supremacy and racism that we don't understand what drives it. It's driven by economics in this country. And that is why I open up our show talking about, are we as African Americans living the second Reconstruction period in the history of this country? Because in the 1800s, right after the Civil War, there was a construction period. There was an excellent documentary that was produced over PBS this weekend. It talked about and chronicled the end of Reconstruction in this country and how the Black codes came in, how Jim Crow came in after that, and how we have been legislatively put at a economic permanently disadvantage being able to compete in this country. This renewable energy industry is a multi-billion dollar industry that is coming into its in its infancy phases. But when we begin to look at the economics behind it, we can look at the issue of deregulation versus regulation, and you can look at things such as the PACE program. Now, we've talked about this program, and we're going to get into that information for you after we take a short pause for the cause here on Solar Now and the Future with the second.
Life is a song. What's singing? Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome, welcome back to the airways of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Now, under our news and events tab, Once you log on to our website at Positive Change, P as in Paul, C as in cat.com, click on our news and events tab. You'll be able to scroll down and you'll see an article that talks about the electric vehicle program approved. Now, this particular program being approved, we're talking about the Public Service Commission of Washington, D.C. has approved its electric vehicle infrastructure charging program for the nation's capital. And we had an opportunity last year, we attended those open public forums, which was put on by Pepco, when they were working on the proposal to go to the Public Service Commission for approval. But we're down the road now. We're not talking about what's being proposed. We're talking about the fact that this is actually been passed. It has been approved by the Public Service Commission here in Washington, D.C., which is chaired by Mr. Willie Phillips, who took Chairman Betty Ann Kane. Electric vehicle program approved. And this was put out by the D.C. Public Service Commission. It was published April 21st, 2019. You said the D.C. Public Service Commission approves the part of Pepco's application for transportation of electrification TE program, formerly case number 1130, order number 19898. The D.C. Public Service Commission allowed Pepco to deploy infrastructure to support 55 public electric vehicle EV charging stations and additional infrastructures to support charging electric for electric taxis, shared riding vehicles, and buses. This action fosters an expansion of EV charging, the EV charging market in the district, and helps the achieve the district clean energy plan and climate change commitments. Additionally, the order includes approval of the rollout for residential time and use rates for home EV charging, which will encourage the charging of EVs at off-peak hours, a critical element for any successful TE initiative. The D.C. Public Service Commission will monitor these programs as they are implemented and to study the effects of the TE on the electrical grid and the EV market as the EV market expands. Now, you can click on the order and from our website, and it will take you directly to the PFL PDF file, which basically was put out on by the Public Service Commission on April 12th of this year. By this order of the Public Service Commission, the District of Columbia grants in part and denies in part the application for Pepco Electric Company, Pepco, for approval of its transportation electrification program. The TE program application specifically and the commission, number one, approves the development of residential whole house time of use rate for electric vehicles in the offering. Number two, it directs Pepco to provide make-ready infrastructure for offering 7 and 8 public electric vehicle charging offerings in 10 and 11 public transportation charges to facilitate the deployment of electric vehicle charging stations determined that PepsiCo can only sell electricity from EBCs through an affiliate and established a temporary transportation of electrification, the TE Working Group, to further explore the development offering for a fixed price residential rebate offering and multi-dwelling units EBC deployment offering, and discussed in paragraphs 42 and 44 in this order, reporting back to the commission within 180 days of this order. So it's a lot of stuff going on, folks. Now, like Brother you know, his name omits me at the present time, but he always talks about on his show, mumbo jumbo. You know, this stuff is very, very technical. Let me make it plain, folks. When I attended that electric vehicle infrastructure open information sessions that were put on by PEPCO, it was discussed that it was going to take 15.2 million dollars, which these rates going to be passed on to you on your electric bills. Folks, whether you drive, walk, or use a bike, if you live in an apartment, if you don't live in a treehouse and you got electricity, water, and gas, you're going to contribute to this. The Green Bank plays a significant role in this. Now, Mayor Bowser has to appoint 7 members to the board of directors for the Green Bank by the end of this month, April, and she has to appoint someone to head that bank. My organization has been looking out, and we've testified about a number of issues in front of the city council back on October the 9th in front of Councilwoman Mary Shea, and on October 29th in front of Councilwoman Mac Duffy about the issue of there being not just set aside, but based on what black folk are putting in, what we should be getting out. Basically, when we look at the long-term investment that African-Americans have already paid into it and then displaced out of the district. Now, I'm going to hit into some of this stuff because I'm going to talk about this 2.0 sustainability rollout that Bowser's is saying this is what she's doing, but this was something really that the original plan was done by Vincent Orange. So we give credit where credit due. And credit has to go because he initiated the first plan. Now, it's been upgraded and moved around. But to give some background on this bill, first, as a threshold member of the commission notes that the Clean Energy DC Omnibus Act of 2018, which I just said they just passed, grants the commission the authority to approve PEPCO's TE program application and requires that we consider the impact of the global climate and the District of Columbia climate commitment in our decisions. We also acknowledge that the district has set forth goals to reduce greenhouse gases and GHGs emissions by 50% by year 2032. The transportation sector contributes more than 20% of the district GHGs emissions, and according to research, achieving an 80% reduction in the GHGs emissions by year 2050 will require that the district's passenger vehicle fleets shift entirely to zero GHG emissions vehicles. Currently, the district EV penetration is only 0.23%. It is with a backdrop that we began our review of the company's TE application and relevant regulatory actions. Pepco's TE application was not filed in a vacuum. On April 21st, 2017, Pepco filed a proposal seeking approval on limited vocabulary demand management programs to plug in electric vehicles charging in the district. EV programs consist of five offerings with various options to allow Pepco to focus on expanding the PIV use in the District of Columbia. October 19, 2017, after solicitation comments on Pepco's EV programs, formal case 1143, the commissions transferred the entire docket to formal case 1143 into formal case 1130 and closed the formal case 1143 in a formal case 1130. Commission adopts recommendations from the Manassas Consultant Smart Electric Power Alliance to create six working groups with electric vehicles incorporated into the recommended work groups, non-wires alternatives, and future rate designs. The commission anticipated these two working groups could address electric vehicles issues, including EV infrastructure, EV coupling with storage, EV rate design, and hosting capacity. Now, yours truly was one of the ones who took their time and went down to several of those working sessions and basically sat in to make sure I was aware of what was going on at that time. And we came back and we reported to our listening audience about what we had discovered at those hearings. And when we looked at the issue of what was going on, we discovered that it was going to be spending proposed that the Pepco plan was proposing that 15 point something million dollars be spent for electric vehicle infrastructure in the District of Columbia. Now, we have that information around here somewhere. We didn't pull it out as of yet, but as we are talking to you now, we're trying to locate that information so I can share with you some of the actual numbers that was in the actual proposal for electric vehicle infrastructure in the District of Columbia. But as I'm looking right now, it's not very handily available. So what we're going to do, we're going to do what we do. We're going to take another pause for the cause here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, and we'll be right back with that.
Life is a song worth singing.
I can too.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.
Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know our call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646 668-2948. Now, as I indicated, the electric transportation program in the District of Columbia. Now, this was workshop two, and it talked about cost, and it looks at building $2,700,000. We're just looking at the building costs, almost $50,000. Customer education and outreach, they've got $2,700,000. Workforce development training, $1 million. Program management, $1,449,000, almost, let's say, $1,500,000. So we're talking about $1.5 million. Program management, $135,000. System updates, $135,000. Reward and credit processing, $75,000. The system interface and update, $75,000. Reward and credit processing, fleet camera, $4,845,000. Analysis and reporting. What we began to look at here, the total was $15,419,565. This is real dollars which will be coming to your mailbox in the form of an assessment on your electric bill, gas bill, and water bill in the District of Columbia. So check with your mailman when you get your bill and you open your bill and check to see your clean water fee. And all the other fees on your gas, water, and electric bill, you might have to go up to Howard University and get one of the professors in the School of Business to see if they might be able to decipher what's in the bill. Black folks, this is how the economics is being played in this thing. We don't show up at these hearings. You go to these meetings just like you had Earth Day. You had white folks real concerned about the planet. They're not greatly concerned about the implications on your community. You got to be concerned about the space that you occupy, because if you don't watch it, they'll be using the financing that's coming from through various programs for the developers that you are. The same money that they're taking from you will be used to move you out of your neighborhood. We make it plain on this show, this is why we struggle with getting support. And if you don't appreciate what I'm saying to you, then you can do your own research, because you definitely don't have to take my word for it. But you will find that this is the information that I have taken the time and energy to research and pull together before I come on this platform every week to present this information to you. This is real. Why is it real? Because something called the Federal City Council, which is made up of your hotel, restaurants, and Nightclub Association of Washington, D.C., with your Chamber of Commerce. This is not about you or me as an individual citizen or resident of the area. This is about the tourist trade, folks. And the hotels, restaurants, and nightclubs, they want to make sure they got plenty of electric vehicle infrastructure here in the nation's capital. So when folks decide they want to drive their electric vehicle to Washington, D.C., they're not going to have to worry about and suffer from range anxiety because they won't know where they can go to charge their electric vehicles. The issue is how many of our people are going to be able to get any kind of economic business benefit from this. This makes no sense if we can put in and can't get out. When you begin to drill down and you begin to look at the millions of dollars that's going to come to play in this information. I have all this information that is on my website. And as I indicated to you, you can log on to our website, click on our news and events tab, scroll down, and you'll see the links where you can go and you'll be able to get this information for yourself. And that's what we encourage people to do. Because I don't care who it is, me or anybody else, you know, you don't have to take my word for it. You can do your own research. And that's what I think people should do. Especially when they walk around with miniature computers in their pockets. They're called smartphones. They're called iPhones. You can pull this data up and find this information for yourself. But you're going to find out that you will be paying for this because all of the automobile manufacturers have already decided what they're going to do. They're coming out by year 2030, they want to have 30 million electric vehicles on the street. So when you begin to look at major metropolitan areas like the DMV market area, you know this is going to be one of the major areas with the federal government here. They're going to shift all their fleets to electric vehicles. This creates opportunity. Whether we seize the opportunity is the question. I don't know anybody else raising this question or even talking about the issue. So if you do, I want you to call me here on our platform at 646-668-2948. Once again, I want you to join us by calling us at 646-668-2948. And please share with our listening audience your insight on this electric vehicle infrastructure. I know they just have Earth Day, which was held, and you had people, young folk who came to Washington, D.C., who walked to Congress, and they wanted to lobby the new Congress with the Democratic House, but the Senate is still controlled by the good old boy network on the Republican side. But I'm not sure that the Democratic Party ain't a part of that old good buddy network also. I am a registered independent, so I have no problem with letting folks know that. When a young man told me one time, he said, look here, man. He said, the Republicans make you poor, and the Democrats pimp the poor. I said, what did you say, young man? He said, oh, gee. He said, the Republicans make you poor, and the Democrats pimp the poor. Now, that is a deep statement. It may sound like some slang that might be something you may hear called the term ebonics. for black vernacular. But the fact of the matter is, he made a hell of a lot of sense. When you think about all of the programs that are supposed to be out here and that are put forth by the so-called Democratic administration, especially in the District of Columbia, and half of the information and programs out here that's passed, the people don't know a damn thing about them. They're great programs, but how good are they when the public don't know, especially black folks don't know nothing about them? Now, we spend a hell of a lot of time on this platform talking about these renewable energy programs such as Solar for All and the different initiatives. We're going to get into another initiative because that gives us the segue right into our next topic, which we're going to talk about, is the D.C. Public Schools approved pilot program for renewable energy through PPAs. So this is something that affects our public school system. So when you go to our news and events tab, you can also check out that article by clicking on our news and events tab, and you'll be able to locate that specific article that talks about the D.C. public school system and how they have entered into a working relationship with the through public contracts and have issued PPAs for that specific public schools have entered into these PPAs to green our schools and the infrastructure. So when you begin to look at these issues and how they play into it, well, it makes sense to understand that, well, we need to be at the table and understanding how these things operate and who makes these decisions on who's going to get what. This is everyday, folks. We're talking about things that are happening as we speak. We're not talking about no pie in the sky. We're talking about these are things that are happening right now. You can look and you can see that there are green solar systems being installed on your public libraries in the District of Columbia. There are solar systems being installed on your public high schools because most of the high schools here in D.C. have been completely renovated, and they're putting solar systems on the roof of these buildings. The issue is, who's getting these contracts to do this? I know what African-American company, Mr. Damian Strong, was doing, had a contract, and he was working and doing some installs on the D.C. public libraries. So we're talking about wealth creation. There is a great deal of money that is to be made in this. And if, in fact, we are going to benefit from any of this, we have to first know about it and then take action. Because knowing about something doesn't mean little boy said, don't mean a cotton picking thing if you're not moving with the information after you get the information. So you got to come up with a plan of action and be about moving forward with that plan of action. Because if you don't, it ain't coming to you. Now, I can attest to that. It will not come to you at all. Believe me when I tell you that there is a lot of work to be done. It's more work to be done than it is so-called celebration. But when we look at what is going on in this sector as it relates to the D.C. public schools moving in that type of direction and entering initiatives, the issue is how many of our people are going to the meetings and have any input in this whole process. And that's very, very key. It's very, 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 very key. Now, D.C. Public Schools approves pilot program to procure renewable energy through power purchase agreements. The D.C. Public School has approved a pilot program to procure renewable energy through long-term purchase power purchase agreements, PPAs, within the PGM interconnect regions. There is a targeted quantity of 5% of the district standard of office service. It's called the SOS load, according to the order 1989-7-19897 in form of case 1017, PEPCO's standard office for service, referred to as the SOS, because I can come up with another synonym for that, but I won't on the show. But it sure enough opened up the door. Is the default electric supply service for consumers who do not choose their electric generation and transmission from third parties or competitive supplier. PEPCO purchases the SOS electricity from wholesale suppliers through a competitive bid process. Now, as Max Roach, Brother Roach, would say, it sounds like a bunch of mumbo jumbo. While starting small, the D.C. Public Schools is also taking direct action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, GHGs, by promoting construction of new renewable energy generation within the PGM JM region. Nevertheless, this is just a start for the D.C. public school system in considering increasing the amount of renewable energy to produce through a long-term power purchase agreement through the SOS in the future. Utilizing the PPA in this manner is consistent with the with Clean Energy D.C., the District of Columbia Climate Energy Action Plan, and Clean Energy D.C. Omnibus Amendment Act goal of 50% reduction of GHG's emissions by year 2032. All of this stuff goes right back to the original bill. We beat the drum around time and time and time again about what's going on. You can go to my website and you'll be able also to locate this information. We have downloaded this information for your convenience, positivechangepc.com. Now, what we're going to do here at this present time, we're going to let everybody know who brings this show to you, because every week I have to beat the drum about freedom ain't free. Last week we had Dr. Hughes, who is head of employment services, on our show, and she talked about the D.C. Infrastructure Academy, because they have a state-of-the-art facility. It's located at 2330 Pomeroy Road, and it's providing a lot of the training for in IT, as well as PV installers, as well as electrical wiring. It's providing a lot of that training for individuals who are interested in getting into this area. Now, as we indicated, this show every week is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned solar installation and development companies. To address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment of young black men and women here in the DMV market area and nationally. Also, to educate the black community locally and nationally about the impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the black community through black talk radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on black America, as well as by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, which you're listening to right now from, we're broadcasting live from Tacoma Park, Maryland, right outside of our nation's capital, and streaming over the World Wide Web, over Blog Talk Radio, via Facebook and Twitter. Also, it's brought to you by ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production online and traditional, newspaper production online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, speaker bureau management. And for more contact information, you can contact ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. Once again, you can contact ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. Now, someone has, well, the audacity, because I'm quite sure they don't know that I'm on the airwaves right now talking into our listening audience over the World Wide Web, over this format, Blog Talk Radio. But we try to bring this show to you every week, and we will continue to beat this drum and bring this show as long as we are able to do so. But we definitely need your help, and I need to be able to do some things to make you be able to get me some help. So we're going to get those issues resolved. That's on me, but we have been doing, little boy said, we have been working tirelessly trying to make things right here with this show and this format for your educational benefit. And if you join us on a regular basis, you know that's what we do here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on black America. Now, there's another aspect of what we were talking about public policy and procedures. Now, this was a letter from Mayor Bowser on the Sustainable DC 2.0 DC program. Now, this was put out by the Department of Energy and Environment on 4/24/2019. Now, this letter setting the scene that was put out by the mayor. 5 years ago, the District of Columbia released the plan to make the District of Columbia the most sustainable city in the country. At the time, the D.C. Sustainable Plan was one of the most innovative, ambitious sustainability plans in the country. While the district remains at the forefront of innovation and sustainability, a lot has changed in the past 5 years. We have been major economic, political, and social change in the district and across the country, and we need sustainability plans to reflect the reality of 2018. We need to plan that takes advantage of new opportunities and addresses the new challenges that have arisen, a plan that meets the needs of a changing city with a population of 700,000 plus residents who call the district home. That is why I directed my team to update the sustainability DC plan into a strategy for 2018, which we call, can all be proud, is called DC 2.0 sustainability. Planning cannot happen in a vacuum. The sustainable DC 2.0 focuses on making the district the healthiest, greenest, most viable city of all district for all district residents. But there are many forces at play in the city which that works is why this work is happening. The population base of Washington, D.C., both in how many people who live in the district is rapidly changing. The population of the district is projected to reach 900,000 by 2032. The final year of this plan is Scope 1. The demographics of Washington, D.C. are changing, known for decades as the Chocolate City. D.C. is now 47% black. At the same time, the district's white population is 11%. The Latino community, 4.3%, is 37%. And Asian community is 4.3%. The increase in diversity brings new opportunities, benefits, but also brings new challenges for many residents. While Washington, D.C. is one of the best educated cities in America, it enjoys a relatively high median household income of $73,000 compared to the national average of $55,000. Prosperity is not enjoyed by all residents. In 2017, the median household income in Ward 8 was $32,000, while in Ward 3, it was $110,000. Well, we do know which neighborhood was Africans living in America and which one was Europeans or white folks living in America. There's no discretion, a discrepancy about that, about which Ward where our folks has the largest population base and the lower income. Almost 70% of the district residents live under the poverty rate. 94% of the white residents hold a bachelor's degree in higher education, while only 33% of the black residents do. While the District of Columbia has made affordable housing a top priority, the pressure of rising housing costs is felt by many residents. More than 40% of the district residents spend over a third of their monthly income in housing costs. Sustainable DC is the final product of 20 months of intensive community engagement involving thousands of residents. Not every action will work as anticipated, as inevitably we will need to adjust our strategies as Washington, D.C. continues to change. If you have a suggestion on how to implement one of these actions, your advice would be appreciated. I don't believe that. Making the District of Columbia the healthiest, greenest, most viable city in the country will require ideas, energy of our entire community. I invite you to get involved with the sustainabilitydc.org. Now, see, I don't blow no smoke on this show. I am the one who has beat the drum since 2000. And we've been producing this show. It's 2019. We've been producing this show over a year out of our own pockets without a dime from any government agency, even though we qualify and we have applied for community engagement grants. And the sad part about this, when I reached out to the DOEE's Office of Community Engagement to try to get someone to come here on this show as on a regular basis to talk about the program, such as this program here, they'll send me a damn email and want me, and if they wouldn't send me the email if they didn't want me to talk about it, because they know what I do. And I'm quite sure they're monitoring this. So, Tommy Wells, if you're listening, this is directly to you. Dissemination of information ain't free. And y'all go around and beat around the bush all kinds of ways about advertising on WL, spending a few dollars here, a few dollars with the Washington Informer. So they'll do something on Earth Day, but on a consistent basis, week to week, I am the only viable talk radio format out here talking about the issues affecting D.C. residents in this renewable energy industry here in Washington, D.C. And it's a travesty that I cannot get no support. But I will continue to do what I do. But I'm letting y'all know, I'm giving you notice. When you spell my name, B-E-T-H-A, and I receive an award called Soul Ambassador Award, Soul Neighborhoods United would like to recognize me for being an outstanding advocate for advancing solar District of Columbia and supporting homeowners and community members as they made their decision to go solar on this day, Saturday, February the 9th, 2019. Now, I was given this award by Solar United Neighbors, who was one of the grantees who received, they received about $4 million in grants. I asked for $20,000. They couldn't get it. But everybody's been on this show, including Tommy Wells. So I guess they figured that, well, we'll cut him off. We won't let nobody else comes on his show and talk about anything, then that sort of discredits what he's doing. But let me tell you something, folks. I'm going to continue to beat this drum. Black people in this country have to stop being naive. As I said to you before, we are living in the second Reconstruction right now under 45's administration. Now, you can say what you want, because it's not 45. It's those millions of white folks who put him in office who think that he's going to do something for somebody other than wealthy folk, other than himself. It's clear that if you are not wealthy in this country, you got a problem. As little boys say, ain't no air in that. Now, we have been on our soapbox for an hour and a half talking about the topics that we had laid out to discuss with our listening audience today. I truly hope that if you are listening in to this show, that you have enjoyed the information that we have researched and prepared for your listening pleasure. And please pass the word for people to tune in to Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, because I'm going to tell you something. When Black folks catch a white folks catch a common cold, Black folks, we got pneumonia. If we want to look at the economics of the picture, the income disparities between Ward 8 and Ward 2 in D.C. truly lays that out, and there's no difference out here in Ward 9 where I'm living. It's called Prince George's County. Make no mistake about it, and we don't have to have that discussion about Montgomery County, because as Richard Pryor used to say, don't go out there messing with those the folks of Jewish faith without no money. Don't go downtown without no money. It's all about the economics, folks. That is the bottom and the only line. And nobody wants to hear it. If they don't want to know why you don't have it, It's the issue of do you have it? Because this is how this next generation of millennials have been socially engineered. They care about themselves and themselves only. But I guess that falls on our generation, the baby boomers, because we bought into the illusion of inclusion and we sold that bill of goods to our young folks, and they are spoiled, rotten. That's our fault. But I know that I go through this battle in my own household on a day-to-day basis, because if you save the dollar, you made the dollar. And that can be a struggle with folks who think that they have a ride of color and they have bought into the illusion of inclusion. But you can believe that folks who have just gotten here, which they are calling immigrants, they have just the baby boomers and the generation in terms of the new millennials and these young people who are coming through here, they're calling the Latinos. These folks get here, they are basically, a lot of them put down that they're white on their application. They do not identify with black folks. I'm not angry with them or mad at them because I know that it's not of their making. It's the games that corporate America plays. It goes into these countries. They drain and exploit the resources from these countries and make it damn near impossible to live. This madness exists, folks. It's not an accident. We, as Africans living in this country, need to stop playing this game that we don't need each other when we don't have a damn thing but each other. But that's real, too. And they play all isms, classism, sexism, and racism. And we got one serious, serious issue here in the District of Columbia with black men and black women not working together, rather than working together, and how and who's put up front and who's given the economic access to some resources to get to move the ball forward. So that's a whole nother subject and topic, which I'm not going to get into today. But we hope that we brought you some news that you can definitely use. Once again, here on our platform, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact on black America. Until next week, we say go in peace.
I hear the song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I don't try. Sing it.